from the heart of Dubai, where tomorrow is being built today to the world. Welcome to the CTO Show with Mehmet. Here, we redefine technology and reimagine possibilities. With Mehmet, delve into the riveting realms of AI, cybersecurity, and digital technology. Experience the thrilling highs and lows of startups. Immerse yourself in the spirit of entrepreneurship and witness the future of business innovation being written in real time. Now, without further ado, let's tune in and explore the future.
Hello and welcome back to a new episode of the CTO Show with Mehmet. Today, I'm very pleased joining me, Wes Cosmo. Wes, thank you very much for joining me. The way I love to do it is I like my guests to introduce themselves. But by the way, I'm going to give a hint to the audience. Wes is like someone who's an icon in the IT field and the security field. But I love him to tell us more about, you know, his history and his background.
Sure. Well, I'm an old dude. So where shall I start? I learned programming in the Air Force in the 60s and 70s. Did some coding for an insurance company in the 70s, and then went into marketing for graphics products and software. Then in 1981, I decided that I wanted to go off on my own, so I created the world's first online encyclopedia. And that turned out to be a terrible business plan, but fortunately, we added social features fairly quickly, and by 1982-83, the encyclopedia had become just a menu item on a social network. So we were in social media starting in 1982. We sold that business to Rupert Murdoch's News America Corporation in 93. I retained a license to some of the host technology and created a second business that I sold I merged with another company and sold the combined business to NTT Vario in 1998. So suddenly I found myself with time on my hands and decided that I needed to write a book about bringing accountability back to social media. Because the web transformation of social media meant that anyone can claim to be anyone. And the results were and still are disastrous. Back when the early days of social media, not just my own Delphi, but all of them, you had accountable anonymity. No one got to know anything about you unless you told them. Or unless you had transgressed in some way, had defrauded someone or defamed them, or sometimes dealt drugs online, in which case, if the offended party got a court order, then we would disclose your identity to the person presenting the court order. But otherwise, you were accountably anonymous. You were accountable for what you did, but as long as you didn't step over the line, you were anonymous. So that's what this book is that you see behind me. Where is it? Right over here, Quiet Enjoyment. Yeah. I started writing Quiet Enjoyment in 1998. My daughter encouraged me to and convinced me that the solution would be based on PKI. So I started. So the book basically is about a global PKI providing accountable anonymity to not just social media users, but to be used in commerce. Some people at the ITU learned that I was writing this book, and they were developing an actual global PKI called the World eTrust Initiative. So they invited me to come work with them, which I did from about 2002 to early 2005. But when they rolled the product out, the system out, the World eTrust Initiative, the member states of the ITU, which of course is a unit of the United Nations, the member states felt that that was a threat to their sovereignty, so they voted to have us pull the plug on the whole system. So the leadership of the World eTrust Initiative asked if I could take it on, and I said, yes, I'd like to change its nature a bit and present it as an online municipality. But yes, so that's what we did on March 7th, 2005 at ITU headquarters in Geneva. We chartered the City of Osmio, which is a new certification authority, global certification authority, attesting only to identities. We only do identity certificates. We don't do web server certificates. We don't do code signing certificates, etc., because we feel as though the missing element in all of these IT problems is measurably reliable identities. So that's what we've been building the quiet enjoyment infrastructure on ever since then.
Absolutely fantastic history, I would say, Wes. Now, again, let's start by asking you something. You know, the issue with the internet, you know, and, you know, the identity problems within the cybersecurity space is something that has been with us for a long time. Now, every time, you know, I kept asking this question because I sit on the other side of the table, I would say. I was, you know, on the client side, as they would call it. I sit on the consultant side. I sit on the vendor side. And a lot of people, you know, I talk to, they said we have failed in, you know, coming up with a technology that provides the ultimate security when it comes to identity. First of all, do you agree with this, Wes? And if so, why we have failed till now to get the ultimate, you know, security for our digital identities?
Identity is costly. Measurably reliable identity is costly. And it's costly because it involves a labor-intensive process. You know, we refer to identity verification. There's only so much assurance you can get from you know, basically automated system with a little bit of human intervention involved. What you really need is identity attestation. You need an interview with a qualified and legally liable individual, a notary public, who is criminally and civilly liable for their actions as a notary, and is additionally trained in identity attestation. You need them to not just give a thumbs up or a thumbs down, but actually apply a score to an identity claim, the reliability of an identity claim. So Osmio uses a system called IDQA, Identity Quality Assurance, which measures evidence of identity, EOI, in 8 different metrics. And each of those metrics is scored on a scale of 0 to 9. So you have an aggregate score of 0 to 72. And that tells you the relative degree to which you can rely upon an identity. For business audiences, an important one of those 8 scores is metric number 7, which is assumption of liability, which is kind of glossed over by people, but it's the most important for business audiences. For instance, for online real estate auctions, if someone bids on an $80 million office building and wins the bid, and it turns out they're using a fake ID, that's very costly to the auction house. They want to have a bond behind the identity claim so that if they do suffer such an event, the proceeds of the bond are available to them. But stepping even further back, our identity problems in general started with assumptions that go back to when I started in IT, which, as I say, was the 70s. As I mentioned, I worked for an insurance company. That was actually in the 80s, but the phenomenon was still taking root then. And the assumption was IBM was telling us, you have to start thinking about security, telling us 20-year-olds, 22, 24-year-olds, you got to start thinking about security. Now, actually, they were involving, the older managers who understood security in a physical space. It's not about catching the bad guys. It's about accountability, right? It's like asking your lobby receptionist to get some ID instead of asking your lobby receptionist to identify the intentions and character of everyone who walks through the door, which is, of course, never going to work. If your receptionist is able to catch someone who, shows themselves to be a thief or someone untrustworthy, they're the amateurs. Anyone with any skill is going to appear to be, reliable. So, but of course, when management came to us young programmers and said, IBM tells us we need to be thinking about security. Tell us about security with these newfangled computers. Remember, we're talking about the 80s now. They knew more about security than we did. But our view of security was what a 20-year-old's view of security is, from television cop shows and these days it'd be World of Warcraft. It's the drama of security, whereas, accountability-based security is much less dramatic. And, oh, by the way, that makes catch the bad guys' securities easier to market, right? Because you can use images of guard dogs and razor wire and commando outposts, whereas using images of a receptionist checking ID is just not all marketing needs to touch. Marketing, in order to be successful, needs to touch an emotion, touch an emotional nerve. And it's much easier to do that with catch the bad guy's security. But catch the bad guy's security, the assumption that that's what security is made of is where we went wrong. So I have to do a mea culpa here. It's us young programmers in the 80s that set us on this erroneous course. And those managers who did not understand computer technology, but knew better than we did what constitutes security in a physical space, that exact same set of assumptions should be applied to digital spaces. It's about accountability. It's not about catching the bad guys. And accountability relies upon measurably reliable identities.
So Wes, it looks to me like we were part of the problem, because you're saying it's not about the catch the bad guys. Of course, it's not about the catch the bad guys, but it looks like we did the harm to ourselves by keep focusing. And by the way, a lot of my guests here on this podcast, they shared the same view with you. They said shame on us for 30, 40 years. We're trying to, stop cyber attacks, we're trying to do this, we're trying to do that, but we failed because it seems like we are chasing some mirage, which is, yeah, we can stop the bad guys, which is never it will gonna happen because the bad guys will always have their ways. And instead of focusing on some other root causes, you know, for these cyber attacks, we kept, you know, talking about, yeah, we did this, we can catch the bad guys, we can follow them in the dark web, we can do this, we can do that. So that resonates a lot with, you know, some thought leaders into the domain. But let me, I'm not kind of a skeptical guy, but maybe someone would say, yeah, what you're saying is right, Wes. But now coming to the infrastructure that we can build to have the accountable security and accountable, you know, identity management. So someone might say, how we make sure that this infrastructure itself, it can provide this, I would say, balance between being secure and at the same time doing the anonymity that you just also talked about.
So in other words, respecting privacy and ensuring privacy at the same time, you're making people accountable. And the first thing I would say is PKI is an infrastructure that was invented back in the 70s, and it's good stuff. It works well. We should not be using it to identify, for instance, in code signing, we shouldn't be using it to identify a department of a company that produces code, but rather there should be an individual professionally licensed code signer who takes legal responsibility for the integrity of the code. That means that they're going to apply a lot more diligence to that assurance. If the department signs a bunch of code, well, no one is on the hook. But stepping back from that a little bit, assuring that PKI identity certificate makes a person accountable and yet respects their privacy and limits the trackability. Think about your car's license plate. Anyone can see it. It makes you accountable for what happens on public roadways, but no one gets to know the identity of the driver or owner unless there's been an incident. If there's been an accident, or if the cops feel as though there's evidence that you're transporting something illegal. So that's how our identity certificate is built. We have accountable anonymity. We use we call it a license plate certificate. It makes you accountable without disclosing your identity. We have two other methods in our PKI to ensure privacy. One is that our CA, or certification authority database, does not actually have identity information in it. Rather, it has a certificate serial number and public key, of course, but it also has your identity quality score, identity reliability score, and it has the address of the attestation officer who was responsible for setting your identity reliability score. So that if for instance, a dictator comes to the operator of the certification authority and says, I need to know the name of this person who's been critical of my regime, the answer is, we can't do that. We don't have that information. That information is available only from the attestation officer. And he or she, an individual, will need a court order, and then will decide whether it's a legitimate court order. So those are two methods by which we assure assure your privacy. Also, our CA is in Geneva, so the user has the benefit of Swiss privacy laws.
That's you know, good to hear. Now, the question also that comes to mind, Wes, is, now, I understand, you know, this is, you know, a very robust, secure way, and it applies the accountable security, which also applies the privacy. Just out of curiosity, would that also help us in, because, you know, what's happening now with all, you know, this AI age and, you know, the bad guys, which we mentioned, like the catch the bad guys methodology was all about them. So now we are told that these bad guys, actually, they can use these methodologies and actually leverage these security measures and technologies to, again, do something bad. So is there a way where, you know, we can prevent the bad guys from leveraging, you know, the anonymity and, you know, the security of this system from using it to, for something bad? Is that something possible?
Absolutely. I think what you're describing is blockchain. The original blockchain, of course, was presented to the world along with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a truly decentralized system where anyone can run a node, and which not only means it's horribly inefficient, but it's also a gift to criminals. They're both PKI and blockchain are built on the same asymmetric cryptography construction materials. We call them construction materials because we think that's what they are. But in the case of blockchain, the whole point is to is to erase accountability. And the point of PKI is to use asymmetric cryptography in a way that enhances accountability. It's the polar opposites. So I think that especially when you adopt the principle and assumption that there's no such thing as a certificate, a digital certificate, X509 certificate, whatever you want to call it. There's no such thing as a digital certificate that is based, that identifies only an object, a server, a web server, a mail server, a bunch of code, a program. In our world, we issue identity certificates, and by that we mean human beings identify a person with a measurably reliable identity. If you want a web certificate, a web server certificate, any other certificate, it needs to be digitally signed by someone identified by an identity certificate. And the other side of this thing, I need to add, because a lot of people aren't aware of the fact that unlike a password or all of our other security measures, the private key never leaves the device. Now, there are PKIs where, again, to save money, to enhance profits, the key pair is generated on a server and then sent to the user. We don't do that. We never do that. That's bad practice. We generate the key pair on the user's device. We never know the private key. We call it a PEN, a personal endorsement number, which, you know, our PKI terminology is our own because we differentiate an identity-only PKI from the way PKIs have been used for everything else. We identify only people. So a private key, a PIN is a type of private key, and a PCN is the public key, is our version of a public key. But they're technologically, they're exactly the same.
Absolutely. You know, I get the point, and I like that you did this similarity so people can relate to you know, between the PKI and the blockchain. Now, Wes, if what you're describing, I would call it, you know, and music to my ears if I was a, you know, a leader in cybersecurity. It would be the for a business owner, he would say, or she would say, oh, wow, like this is the ultimate thing that we can have. Now, how we can push this technology to be more in every business. So, but I'm sure that there will be some challenges and some hurdles that is maybe slowing us from adopting this accountable security and identity in a world where I know, and also you described the internet is broken, you know, like, because a lot of things are going on and we need to really come up with solutions. Like, I think, you know, we reach a phase, and I've seen a video that attracted me last year, you know, where they showed the parents taking the photo of the child, and then the child grows up and they say, okay, they stole my identity and now they are using it to, you know, do bad things and so on and so on. So how we can reach, what obstacle we need to cross to reach, you know, the safe haven, I would say, that we are aiming for?
Well, we've taken a step in the direction with zero trust. You know, obviously zero trust begs the question, okay, now you don't trust the person. What's next, you know? And my answer is 20 trust, 30 trust, you know, some number on a scale of 0 to 72, which identifies the degree to which you can trust that identity. But more importantly, people need to be educated about PKI. We worked hard to create some short videos, and we came up with one two-minute video, and it's proven to be very effective in showing what PKI is about, just how it essentially works. You have the two very large numbers. We call PKI puzzle kit infrastructure. We don't refer to the private key and public key as keys at all. We call them numbers because that's what they are. And we have learned through our own research that the word key confuses people. But but when you call it a number, a very large number, mathematically related numbers, people get that. People understand that. But understanding of PKI is the key. PKI is amazing stuff. And it's just a lack of knowledge. And I mean lack of knowledge among CISSPs, you know, security experts. Often, if you ask them to explain PKI, they can't. It's just been a subject that's been it's hiding in plain sight is a term we use all the time.
Do you think that the reason for that, because at some stage I was so obsessed in reading about cryptography and, you know, cybersecurity in general. And one of the things that I noticed, especially when the chapters were discussing the PKIs and discussing how cryptography work and how certificates work, there's some math involved in this. Do you think, like, this is why people try not to focus on these areas and they take it for granted? Oh, someone, you know, have these public keys, you know, why I should care about it? Do you think this is part of the problem?
Yes. Yes. And in fact, I can't tell you how many times when I mention PKI, that they respond with something about encryption. And this is one of the things that makes explaining PKI so difficult. Yes, encryption is involved in PKI, but it's when the need is, so PKI is good for three things, basically: authentication, digital signatures, and decryption key management. Now, when you're wanting to encrypt and decrypt a file, asymmetric is only good for small very small files like symmetric keys. You know, it gets when the assumption is that it's about encryption, you get into the weeds quickly. And so you need to avoid just talk about authentication and digital signatures. Digital signatures, even more than authentication, are going to save the world from chaos. Digital signatures everywhere, DSE. And forget encryption, because when you start talking about encryption, then you have to differentiate between symmetric and asymmetric. And, you know, and then the fact that you are using encryption to encrypt a key, an encryption key, you know, that's where understanding of PKI goes off the rails, because it does get complicated, not mathematically complicated, but logically complicated, because there are more moving parts than people are expecting. So if we just focus on authentication and signing, that's the key. And digital signatures, really the amount of the need for encryption of files is dwarfed by the need for digital signatures. And people don't think about digital signatures. When they hear PKI, when they hear talk about this stuff, they relate it to encryption of files. And we need to somehow steer people away from that, you know, abyss and get them back to thinking about digital signatures, which are much easier to explain and much more valuable and useful and a bigger part of the solution.
I think you're right 100%, Wes, because also when I discuss this with people, you know, familiar with the matter, as they say, so they forget that, you know, in usually the first thing when someone goes to learn about security, they tell you about the confidentiality of the data, which is encryption does, and the integrity, which is where, you know, I need to know that, is it Wes who sent me this message, document, whatever it is? So you have your digital signature on it, and you need to make sure that it's not forged by someone else. So I think people's mind, and I blame the media a little bit, honestly, here. I blame, you know, some, you know, I would not say thought leader or anything like this. Some people who were kept talking about, you know, they were showing us these screens with, you know, these numbers flipping and the encryption happening in the background, while they forget to educate us, I mean, the general public, about, you know, the importance of the digital identity, to your point, because I said encryption, it's easy. You don't need a supercomputer to encrypt something. You can even do it using a simple Python script, whatever it is. But, you know, to ensure the digital identity of someone, this is, you know, the more bad. Now, with all what is happening, Wes, like with evolving...
Could I add one thought to that?
Sure.
The language of PKI, the practitioners have some practices that just multiply the confusion. And the worst of all is you sign the file with your certificate. No, you don't sign your file with a certificate. And that confuses people, because they've also been told that they need to, quote unquote, they keep their certificate absolutely secret, make it secure. And then they're told, send the certificate to, well, you know, the PKI expert understands totally from context what you're talking about, whether you're referring to a private key as a certificate. But the poor uninitiated, it's totally confusing. And that has thrown people off the rails too. That, as much as anything, is what has made PKI this mysterious thing hiding in plain sight. We just need to, you know, take these PKI experts aside and say, do not say sign with a certificate. Do not say keep your certificate secure and then say send your certificate, you know, to your relying parties. Clean up your language.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you know, like, Wes, if I want to ask you about some, you know, as you said, you've been here, you know, talking about this and practicing this for a long time and all the great work that you have done in this field. When do you think we can expect a safer, you know, internet, safer place where really we can have this accountable security and identity applied on a large scale? Like, and especially, you know, I'm asking you this, do you think like what we are seeing in the emerging technologies space, you mentioned blockchain, people talks about, I know that it's not directly related, but, you know, people talks about quantum, people talks about AI, like, everything is, you know, accelerating now. Do you think we're going to see an acceleration in the mass adoption of this? So we start to see less CTBG, to your point, catch the bad guys?
Here's the thing. Here's the key. You talk about the internet. It was originally referred to as an information highway or an information superhighway. And it's a very apt metaphor. It works. But what is a highway? It is an outdoor public transport system. How do we typically use highways? Don't we you are sitting in a building and I'm sitting in a building, and typically we use highways to go from building to building. Yes, the outdoors is a wonderful place and we all would like to find ways to spend more time outdoors. But we don't hold our meetings, keep our files, and let our kids hang out by the side of the highway, right? What do we do when we find ourselves living and working in a cardboard box by the side of the highway? You know, in other words, what do we do when we find ourselves homeless? We find a building, right? We look for an indoor space. Where are the buildings? Where are the buildings, the online buildings? And the fact is, again, PKI is a remarkable construction material for secure online buildings. Now, here's another thing about the building that you and I are both sitting in. I understand you're in Dubai. I'm in the U.S. state of New Hampshire. I am 100% certain that both of our buildings have occupancy permits. In other words, a licensed, legally liable professional has declared the buildings that we're in to be habitable. In other words, there are no secret passageways. Everything is on the drawings, and if some breach is discovered, some impropriety is discovered, they're legally liable. And if it's truly a case of deception, they'll go to jail, whether in Dubai or in New Hampshire, in the U.S.
Absolutely.
There's your answer. There's your answer to that. We don't fix the highway. The highway doesn't need fixing. It does its job well. What we need is buildings. And that's what quiet enjoyment is about. Quiet enjoyment is a real estate term. Quiet enjoyment is the summation of a lease in two words. It says, you know, here's what the tenant in good standing is entitled to in a habitable structure, you know. And it's not just about noise. It's about security. It's about working elevators. It's about basically a structure that works, a building that delivers what a building is supposed to deliver. That's what we need. There's your answer. It's as simple as that.
I hope, you know, people get it and finally reach that. Wes, any final thought you want to leave us with today? Anything you want to mentioned to the next generation, leaders in this domain, out of, years and years of experience that you have?
Well, certainly. The problems that we are facing may call for stepping back and reevaluating, questioning the assumptions that we use, not just in security, but in our whole digital infrastructure. We're moving to a digital world. We're living in the digital space. And yet there are things that have been learned over not just decades, but centuries about making spaces habitable. PKI dates back to the 70s, but occupancy permits are a lot older than that. The solutions that we're looking for are old. Now, it's a habit of the technology community to always be looking for the new thing. But our solutions are not, aside from identity reliability scores, which basically was created by the U.S. National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST. They have their own system. IDQA, I think, is superior. That's new. Identity reliability scoring, evidence of identity, et cetera, is new. All the rest of it is old stuff. So look for that which is hiding in plain sight. Understand PKI, and go to authentiverse.net. Authentiverse.net to see how a whole continent, a digital continent, can be built where accountability reigns, where City Hall dictates the conditions under which buildings can be built and communities can be organized, but otherwise leaves people free to do their own thing.
That's great, Wes. And, I would highlight one thing you mentioned is we need more education for sure. Like, this is something we, all my guests that came to the show, especially when we talk about the cyberspace, we still have a lot of work to do. And it's not, the traditional courses that are like short videos that, people knows. No, we need like this, to understand, especially the PKI. I believe what you told us today, Wes, it opened my eyes on many things, honestly, from a personal perspective, although I consider myself someone who has knowledge in this space, but looking at things from different perspective. And one takeaway from me, which I wish also people would take from you also, Wes, is let's stop doing CTBG. I'm 100% with you on this one. We need to solve the problem, not just chase some fake things or fake promises, I would call. So this is another one. And regarding the website you mentioned, this would be in the show notes. So for you listeners, if you missed this, you will find the link to the website in the show notes. Also, you will find the link to Wes' website also as well. So if you want to connect with him, you can do so. Wes, thank you very much for being with me on the show today. I really enjoyed it. It's very informative. And again, you took the time with me today. So thank you. And for the audience, if you just discovered this podcast, thank you for passing by. I hope you enjoyed. Please subscribe. We are available on all the podcasting platforms. And if you are one of the loyal followers, thank you very much for sending me your messages and notes and recommendations. Keep them coming. Thank you very much. And we will be together again very soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mehmet.
Thank you, Wes.
Hit that subscribe button. Share the show with your tech-savvy friends and fellow entrepreneurs. And leave us a review on your favorite podcast app. Your support means the world to us.